I'd like to begin with a disclaimer. I'm not an archaeologist or the son of an archaeologist, unlike Bob Cooley. You know what they say about archaeologists. Their life is constantly in ruins. That would not be me. I am a New Testament scholar, but it is my job to analyze archaeological data presented to us by the hard work of archaeologists. And what we're going to do tonight is, the title of the lecture is, Who's Buried in Jesus' Tomb? Not who's buried in Grant's tomb, but who's buried in Jesus' tomb? We're going to talk about first century burial practices of Jews, and we're going to talk about ossuaries, which I will explain in a moment. But let me start out by saying to you that the truth of the matter is that if you want to know something about people's beliefs about the afterlife, study their burial practices. If you want to know something about a culture's beliefs about the afterlife, study their burial practices. Let's have our first slide, please. These are ossuaries. Now, you may be thinking, boy, those people must have been really short. Ossuaries are not the first stage in the process, which is called osligium. What you saw in the video clip was the first stage of the Jewish practice of burial by those who believed in resurrection. They would lay somebody's body out in a tomb, and since the Jews, unlike the Egyptians, did not practice embalming, what they would do is take a ton of spices and put it around and wrap it in the winding sheet around the deceased corpse, because it was normal Jewish practice for up to a week to come and mourn at the tomb. You may remember the story about the mourning over the death of Lazarus. He's been dead for several days, and of course they're still mourning when Jesus gets there days late. Well, the first stage was to lay the body out in a tomb. In Jerusalem, in that environment, it took about a year for the flesh to desiccate. Then, a year later, they would come back, they would disassemble the skeleton, and they would put all the bones in an ossuary, which is a bone box, like ossified. Ossuary means bone box. Now, why would they keep the bones together? Well, now, here's an interesting fact. The rise of the practice of osligium, or burial, reburial, in ossuaries, exactly parallels the rise of the Pharisaic movement. Now, what do we know about the Pharisees and their beliefs that distinguished them from the Sadducees? They believed, as Luke tells us, in resurrection, bodily resurrection. So I don't think it's an accident that this particular kind of burial practice, not just putting somebody in the ground, but reburying them, saving the bones and putting them in a box, parallels the rise of the Pharisaic movement. The theology drives the burial practice. Why do they want to keep those bones together? Because them dry bones gonna rise up one day. So you need to keep them together, right? So ossuaries were where you kept the bones. Next slide. Now, this is the entrance to the so-called Talpiot tomb in East Jerusalem. Much ballyhooed last Easter with a Discovery Channel special that was so protested by the scholars that they yanked it after showing it only once. Spent $3.5 million making the show. It was panned as a docudrama. In fact, one archaeologist called it archaeoporn. And it was yanked off the Discovery Channel because it was so poorly researched and presented. This is the entrance to the Talpiot tomb. We're going to be talking about that. And the question that's being raised is this the locale where Jesus' bones were reinterred? Now, of course, the subtext is, obviously, he didn't rise from the dead. His bones were still around a year later, and they were reburied in the Talpiot tomb. Next slide. Now, here are two of the ossuaries from the Talpiot collection of 10. You will notice that the one at the top, the so-called Mary Magdalene ossuary, is a decorated ossuary, and on the end of that ossuary, there is an inscription. More about that later. But what I want you to understand is there are two kinds of inscriptions that may occur on an ossuary, but the vast majority of ossuaries have no inscriptions at all. They may have decoration, they may be blank, but the majority of the ones that have been discovered by archaeologists do not have any inscription at all. But when they have an inscription, there are one or of two kinds of inscriptions. There are honorific inscriptions, which are carefully carved on the ossuary. And then there are inscriptions sometimes on the end of an ossuary, what I would call a toe tag. That is, it's simply scratched in a hasty scrawl so that the person who interred the ossuary would know who was who in a family tomb where there would be various ossuaries in case they needed to move them. Next slide. Now, again, if you will look carefully, you will see on the bottom what looks like a very difficult scroll. It says somebody, maybe the son of Joseph. This is the so-called Jesus ossuary that was claimed by James Tabor to be the ossuary of Jesus himself. This ossuary is actually much less decorated or ornate than the previous one, which would seem odd. If somebody really cared about Jesus, you would have thought that they wouldn't put Jesus in the Walmart ossuary and put Mary Magdalene in the Gucci ossuary. Next slide. Now, these are the so-called Jesus and Mary Magdalene, or as they preferred to call it, Mr. and Mrs. Jesus ossuaries, when they were brought to New York last Easter and put on display just before the Discovery Channel special. This was the press conference. Next slide. Now, this person is important. He's not a Duke Blue Devil, but he is wearing that color blue. Now, let me tell you a few things about this person. This is the earliest iconographic image of James, the brother of Jesus. And icons and iconographic painting all are highly symbolic in quality. So, first of all, he's carrying a document that's not his diploma. This is a sign that he was what? He was literate. He could read and he could write. And in specific, he's carrying a copy of the letter of James. Then there is the robe. The robe is in dark blue because that was always the iconographic color of purity. So this is an image of James as a saint. Most of the early icons of Mary, likewise, have this blue, this deeper blue, indicating that she was a saint. Now, you'll also notice that James is follically challenged. What would a large forehead symbolically signify? We might think intelligence. But you see, that's not how the ancients thought. The ancients saw that as a representation of somebody who was wise, who had great wisdom. So this portrait of James is not meant to actually physically represent him, but rather theologically interpret him as a literate saint of great wisdom. Next slide.